Good afternoon. On this edition of Live, Grow, Peak, we're going to be discussing exceptional education. And although all of our parents feel that their children are exceptional, the federal government has specific guidelines in which students qualify for additional services based on their needs, their performance, and how the law is written to make sure that our children receive equal services. But we're going to look at equal as it shifts to equitable. Today, I am meeting with Dr. Kentosha Cody. I'm going to allow her to introduce herself, and we'll go over the digital divide and what exceptional student services look like. Welcome, Dr. Cody.
Hey, good afternoon. So I am Dr. Cody. I'm the student support facilitator, and I support our students, parents, and staff members that support our students with disabilities. And virtual learning has been a challenge for our population, for the students that we serve, but we've also seen some successes. The successes have been with the teachers being more flexible with their scheduling so that they're able to meet with students in small groups and sometimes one-on-one through the virtual learning platform to support those students. So those have been successes. Parents have enjoyed the opportunity to actually join their students in the learning and learn some of the strategies that we use with math and ELA. But we've had some overwhelming challenges as well in the areas for our students that have significant developmental challenges. So those parents have been concerned with their students not being, not receiving the level of supports that they would in the actual physical classroom. So those parents sort of feel overwhelmed. We've received feedback that they feel a little overwhelmed. They don't know how much information to provide their students in a given setting and how little to provide their students and how to gauge their students' learning. So parents have felt like they've had to take on a whole lot, and they have also expressed that they're just ready for their kids to get back to their norm, back into that classroom setting.
How are you managing the meetings and the face-to-face time that the students are supposed to receive?
So meetings, we are managing. We're first sending out parents their availability to determine when they're available. And then we are having meetings based on our parents' schedules and our teachers' flexibility. Our teachers are trying to be as flexible as they can because we know our parents work mornings, some parents work evenings. So we want to make sure that we're able to capture our parents and our students so that the parent's able to support the student when the teacher isn't available at that time. As far as students, supporting students, we're making sure that we're taking into account students' IEPs, their individual education plans, and we're making sure that they may not receive all the service hours that they're supposed to be provided in that week, that time frame, but we want to make sure that we're doing something comparable. We're trying to support them at the level that they would in the general education classroom or in their small group setting, whatever the services that's stipulated in their IEP. But we try to come close. We know that we won't be able to capture all those service hours, but we try to come close. We try to talk to our parents, find out what those challenges are, what we need to sort of be flexible about, and make sure we're meeting those students where they are, when they're available, when that parent's available.
So what it sounds like is you continue your same, if you had a co-teaching model set up, you've maintained the same model and you share the
Google
Meets address. And
right, the teacher will share the Google Meet address, share with the interrelated teacher the time that they're providing those services so that the interrelated teacher is able to push into that classroom and support all the students, not just our students with disabilities, but service all those students. And then if they notice that our students, our interrelated students with disabilities are having some challenges, then they're letting those students know that they can meet them right after class, right after that session is done, to focus on some of the challenges that they had during that segment of the class so that they're able to give them some more individualized time and services.
And what kind of innovation do you expect to support identifying students who need special needs services moving forward?
Well, that's a challenge because some of the students may not need services, but they're just having a hard time using this sort of platform. Some students don't learn as well using technology. They need more face-to-face, more hands-on with the teacher, someone actually, you know, standing over their shoulder, prompting them. They just need more a level of support. So it's a little bit challenging to determine if they really are having a deficit or if it's just truly not their learning style, learning this way. But so that will be a challenge to speak to identifying a student. But if a student has having some overwhelming trouble with their general ed content, then that would let the teacher know that, okay, I may need to clue in one of our EIP teachers, ELA or math, to support that student so that we're able to determine and track data to determine if that student really is having some issues with learning and possible learning disability based on, of course, some more extensive testing.
So Google Classroom has been very helpful, and you're able to set up classrooms for the ESE teachers, regular teachers, and have them use each particular pool of resources for the students.
It has, but what we have learned is that we're not able to, we're sort of giving the students a whole lot of time for areas that are challenging to them. So a student may have an issue in the classroom with a certain piece of information or a certain standard, and the ESE teacher is noticing that they're not able to use the manipulatives that they would normally use, and the student may go grab some things around the house, you know, to use those manipulatives, but it's still a bit of a challenge changing it from virtual to, you know, just trying to disseminate the information to the level that the student is able to understand, because we don't have that face-to-face, that hands-on, and manipulating with the students. So it's sort of almost you're trying to tell the student what to do on their end, and they're having a challenge, you know, conceiving it, you know, visualizing it and things of that nature. So it virtual learning definitely does not take the place of, in school brick and mortar classroom learning.
Thank you for your opinion on that. I wonder though, is there the opportunity to create a shift from brick and mortar that includes an opportunity for virtual learning? And I say that just in terms of, correct, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, we know that the traditional brick and mortar, we have a level of data to support that it works and it's successful. But as we move into now having a data set that supports virtual learning 100%, perhaps they may be the opportunity for the merge of the two. I mean, what are your feelings on virtual learning, or at least entertaining a shift?
For general ed students with no impairments, nothing stopping them, and taking into account their learning styles, and if they learn virtual learning is their way of navigating and learning, then possibly. But for students with disabilities and significant impairments, it's definitely not the shift that a student needs. A lot of our students with significant impairments need a lot of hands-on, and they need slow, structured learning. The virtual learning may be too fast. It may not provide all the opportunities for manipulatives. And a lot of our students need the concrete before, you know, the representational and then the abstract. So it doesn't allow that concrete instruction for a long period of time based on their impairment. So I can see the shift for some of our gen ed students where that learning style is comparable for virtual learning, but for some of our students with significant impairments, it's just not going to take the place of the brick and mortar classroom.
You have not seen 100% success rate thus far, right, with your students?
They're okay with it, but they're not happy with it. They're ready for their students to get back into that classroom with that teacher providing that structured learning, and their students being able to engage in that. But a lot of our students need a lot of repetition, and they need hands-on repetition on a routine basis. And so when they're not getting that, and the parents are having to try to recreate what the professional education teacher provides in the classroom, it's not the same. And parents are letting us know that it's not the same. Their student doesn't look, you know, as excited about the learning because they're not what their peers and students feed off of each other. So they get excited when they see each other. And if they see another student trying something out, then they're more apt to try it. So when you take that, the socialization piece from peers out, it impacts learning as well.
And how do you discern between a parent who genuinely has a level of frustration about what their children are doing, and the parents who just want 8 hours of childcare or 8 hours of support with what to do with their child during the day?
Well, we've learned that from the beginning. You sort of learn your parents from the beginning of the school year before we've gone to this model of virtual learning. We learn which parents are, you know, just need somebody to just keep an eye on their child for those 8 hours, and parents that are invested, they're coming in, you know, they're trying to see what we're doing in the classroom, they're popping in and volunteering so that they're able to see how we're doing things, so that over breaks they're able to try to facilitate the same learning, so that when their student comes back, it's not a whole lot of trying to reteach information that we've, you know, been working with the student on. So those parents that are already trying to, you know, put their best foot forward and, you know, engage in what we're doing. And then you have parents that, you know, just have a lot going on, have jobs, you know, that take away from, you know, their day-to-day interacting with their students at the level that they want to, so they're not able to engage. They need you to, you know, take care of their child for those 8 hours, because just life doesn't, you know, lend them that opportunity. Mm.
And before the school year ended, did you have an opportunity during your traditional school year for your students to participate in any STEM activities or STEM-based activities at all?
Oh, most definitely. Our students, our ID students, and our students in our SIDPID program, and our interrelated students, they all had opportunities to participate in STEM learning programs, most definitely.
Good. I'm glad that that worked out, and we'll continue to put our minds together to innovate and see how that we can bring that to fruition in our new virtual environment.
Yeah, that's going to be the challenge there. I'd like to see how we're going to, you know, facilitate that and work that through.
Well, more of that to be seen. Dr. Cody, please allow us the right to invite you back to talk to our parents. It's been very enjoyable. I appreciate all of your efforts, and on behalf of all the children and parents that you serve, thank you.
Oh, not a problem. I thank you for the opportunity to serve. I enjoy it tremendously.